And we are back. Welcome to No Direction Beyond, your Starfinder news, reviews, and interviews podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jefferson J. Thacker, also known as Param, and I am joined by...
Alexander Gunas, the Everyman Gamer.
And I'm James. I write Code Switch.
Excellent. So we've got exciting things to talk about this episode. Ever since Paizo dropped us tiny little bit of news right after PAX Unplugged. It's just the whole new hardcover that everybody's been waiting for them to make for since the release of the game. The Character Operations Manual.
Yeah, it does have a really clinical name, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I was still rooting for it to be called the Advanced Player's Guide just to tie it in and then loop it all in. But hey, Character Operations Manual is a very sci-fi sounding thing. And yeah. Hey, it might be working. So the only thing we know about this book so far is that it's going to have three new classes for Starfinder, which are available for playtest right now. If you did not know that, you can go to starfinderplaytest.com and download the PDF and follow along on the show as we talk about it.
Yes, we have lots to say about it.
This playtest will be going on through January, and 16th. It is January 16th. Thank you, mm-hmm. Alex. And it will you will also be able to playtest in Starfinder Society, just like in Pathfinder Society.
James playtested in Starfinder Society, and I got to run for one. It was an experience.
Excellent. We're going to get into that for sure, but let's go ahead and say the three classes that were announced are the Biohacker, the Vanguard, and the Witch Warper.
Oh, I'm very sorry. What happened there?
I have no idea, James. You just disappeared. Were you trapped by entropy? Witch Warper?
I think it was entropy. Okay. Definitely entropy.
So Witch Warper did not change the probability of your webcam working?
No. It wasn't my webcam. It was the program we're using now. It just kicked me out.
Oh, well, that's not a very nice program. Bad program.
I'm pretty sure that a Witch Warper just warped James's reality so that he had never paid his internet bill for it. Just went away. Then it came back because all augmentations to reality are temporary.
Oh, that sounds like a terrible Witch Warper power.
Wow. I don't know. Wow. In the corporate dystopia that Alex loves to run Starfinder in, that's an overpowered power. It's you are overdue, therefore the corporate state is going to abduct you in a black van.
So James for 12 seconds.
James didn't sit at my table, but literally every time our Witch Warper player, who is our good friend Robin, every time she tried to do anything as the Witch Warper, whether it was like roll a skill check or like can I do this or cast a spell, I always said, well, you do that by changing reality to, and like by the end she was like, reality can stay the same. I just want this incorporeal horror to die.
I just want actuality to change. Reality's fine.
Yes. Yes. But no, it was cool because like one of her spells is like the Starfinder version of Acid Arrow, caustic conversion. Mm-hmm. So like I was like, you change reality and you alter the elements to make this arrow of acid and shoot it at people. And you can really like go far with that flavor. It's one of my favorite parts about the class, that it can literally just sit there and borrow mystic and technomancer spells, but because it has such a powerful theme into what its spellcasting does, you can take all of the spells on its list and be like, this is why it works. I'm not using magic. I'm just changing reality with magic, and it's making a spell.
It feels like these classes have a bit of the like occultic adventures like feel to them, mm-hmm. and I like it.
I need now is energy blasts. Come on, where's my occult class?
They all sort of surprised me too when I was doing my read through of them. But we'll talk about that individually when we get there. But actually, I think the Witch Warper surprised me least on my read through because the name kind of sold me on what it was before I even started flipping through the pages.
Yeah. I know that when I first heard the term biohacker, I assumed it was going to be a shifter who hacked their genetic code to change forms. I was actually kind of disappointed that it wasn't that. But I like the class. The name doesn't evoke what I think they wanted in me.
All right. Well, let's.
Yeah. I don't know why biohacking, your specific metric for what makes a biohacker, is polymorphing.
I mean, that's true. That is mine.
Yeah. You think it would be more along the abjuration lines, but some transmutation. There is some stuff that does some body changing, but not.
But I mean, like, if should we talk about the biohacker first then?
Yes, that's what I've been trying to interject, Alex.
Well, no, this is content.
Let's talk about the biohacker. The biohacker is.
It's also called Anna. It's the Anna.
I was really getting the medic from Team Fortress 2 vibe from this a lot, actually.
I mean, isn't the medic just Anna without a sniper rifle?
That's kind of what makes that character that character.
I'm fine. I think that you could use the biohacker to be Moira, like an integrated energy weapon. That, like, because one of the books in Dead Sons has all of those like necro weapons that shoot cold energy that is like negative energy. You just take that and you integrate it into a suit of light armor, and that's basically like that's all you need. Science will reveal the truth.
Yeah, so the biohacker. Oh, go ahead. You can compare him.
Okay. So the spine of the biohacker is that it's a 6 HP class with 6 plus constitution modifier stamina points. Its key ability score is your choice of intelligence or wisdom, and that choice has some significant effects going forward. It has 6 plus intelligence modifier skill ranks with lots of medicine and science-y and computery skills in the selection. It is proficient with light armor, basic melee weapons, small arms, and grenades. It has a 3-force BAB, a good fortitude save. And that is the spine of the class.
Yes. It's actually, it's interesting because every class in the core rulebook, except for the spellcasters, have 2 good saves. And this is the first class we've seen in the game that has only 1. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of interesting because, like, I don't know how you two feel, but when I look at, like, the basic list of what the class gets, to me, this screams skill class. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And, like, usually the skill classes get reflex and or will as their good save. And this is the first one I've ever seen that got fortitude. So
it kind of fits in with the Dr. Jekyll aspect of the class.
Mm-hmm. I don't think it really has a Dr. Jekyll aspect. So they don't have many powers that, like, you know, I inject myself with a thing and get buff and beefy. Most of it is, like, healing.
Well, no,
like,
actually isn't healing.
Yeah, when you get to the biohacker theorems is when you start to get the Jekyll stuff. Like, that's when you start getting, like, I give you gills or your skin turns toxic.
Yeah, in fact, my probably 2 gripes with this class is there's an issue with, I think, skill compression that is exacerbated by this class, which makes a lot of skills irrelevant. Mm-hmm. And the amount of healing that it's able to do is actually really bad.
Yeah,
it's actually not a healer at all. It does more with status.
Oh, bad as in not good. I thought you were going to say, like, it does too much.
Yeah, no. It doesn't do anything.
Well, I mean, if you get right down to it, like, nobody in Starfinder is really good at healing except for, like, the healer mystic. Yeah. Like, everybody else is just kind of like, nobody has spell slots for healing as a resource is so limited. But I don't think that really excuses what you're saying, because if you're going to add a new class that can heal, they should have options that let them be the healer.
Right, right. I mean, right now, its option for healing is you just buy and make a bunch of Sturms and just load them into your super gun.
Yeah, and you just shoot them at people. Use all your money to shoot them at people.
And that's key. The class, the key of the class is you get a custom scanner, which is basically a super awesome infinite med kit, plus able to do tricorder stuff a la Star Trek at range. And you're Param. Able... Huh?
Param, what does the biohacker scanner say about his power level?
It says that it's under 1 because he's a level 1 character.
Oh.
Yeah. And like the Technomancer... like the Technomancer's computer, you can have it as part of your body or as a handheld device. And this one also specifies you can include it in armor or part of your arm, not just your arm, but it can be part of an augmentation for any cybernetics. Like, it goes a bit above and beyond how they outline this for the Technomancer.
Yeah, and it's this item in specific that I have issues with the skill compression, because it just boils down checks for letting you identify creatures to either life science or physical sciences. And also same thing with crafting serums. It puts it into one of those two camps. So those two, it's cool that those two skills suddenly do a lot of work for you, but with all these skill points.
Well, I mean, to be fair, life science already can identify every living creature in the game.
Except like for magicals, like magic, mystical beasts and stuff.
Yeah. So like there are two that it can't normally do, and you get to do them. Well, undead was normally religion and you use physical science for that. I kind of like the ability to be like, hey, I know the structure of, you know, anatomy and how things work. And so like, because I understand, you know, physics and engineering, now I understand this thing. Like I think that engineering and Starfinder has this issue where when you look at what engineering can do, it doesn't really have a whole lot of like scientific applications, despite engineering being a very heavy, you know, classical science. Mm-hmm. And I kind of like the ability to be like, hey, you know, you could use physical science on this.
Engineering is not quite science. Engineering is like applied physics and math.
Right. Yeah. That's basically science, because you can't do any of the engineering without knowing stuff. And it's not like we make characters have ranks in physical science to do engineering.
I don't exactly get what you're getting at, but that's okay. What's the next class feature?
Next class feature is it good with the needle guns. It's got injection expert, which means it gets bonus to its attack rolls with needle guns. With injection based guns. And that is a key ability for this class, because a lot of your class abilities are going to be using injection weapons on your friendlies and enemies because of the next class feature we'll talk about. But by default, you are proficient with weapons that have the injection property, regardless of what class they are. And you are able to hit an ally with that weapon and choose to not deal damage. You just deliver whatever you loaded into that injection to them.
Mm-hmm. So there's like a diplomat serum. So if you just want to shoot somebody and then have them speak the first language that they hear, you can do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's so weird.
So I don't know how I feel about injection expert as a class feature, because it doesn't make your attack bonus as good as a full BAB character, mm-hmm. but like you're also better than a partial BAB character. Like at first level, if you're sitting there next to a soldier and an operative with the same weapon as you, the soldier is, you're going to be comparable to the soldier at first level. And the operative is only going to beat you if they get the trick attack, assuming that you're all using a small arms ejection. But like once you get to BAB, like I think it's level 5 is where the scaling starts falling off and you no longer keep pace with the soldier, because the bonuses you get don't match when the soldier's BAB would outstrip partial BAB. And so I don't know if the intention is to make the soldier better at shooting injection weapons at higher level, but it feels kind of weird. I sort of almost think that they should have an ability like Exocortex, where like if you scan someone with physical science or life science, that you can use your biohacker level as your BAB from biohacker. Because like at this point, you at ninth level, you would have the same AC reduction that the operative would have, because the operative gives enemies a -2 from being flat-footed. And so like at first level, the operative with the skill check is going to beat you, and then at ninth level you guys are the same, but you don't need the skill check. It's weird math. I don't really like the math on it.
I think that's a strange rabbit hole to go down. I mean, I get what you're saying for the elegance of the math, but this is just meant to be a small bump when using a rather inferior weapon choice.
Though? Because all of the abilities that they have, like the injections, like they don't do anything if your attacks don't hit. And you have a limited number of uses of them, right? So if your attack misses, it's written that they're just gone, because they have no hardness. There's no way they're going to survive that hit, even if it doesn't specifically say.
Well, they do have hardness, but yeah.
Yeah, they have one hit point and like a very low amount of hardness. Mm-hmm. I think that if the entire class is going to be based on delivering these limited abilities, you should have a base attack bonus that's good enough to deliver them.
Well,
that's...
I mean, it depends on who you're delivering it to. If you're delivering it to allies under the injection list, your allies count as flat-footed. So that makes it a little easier to hit them.
Yeah. Right. And you can always just run up and punch your ally with a needle and it's free.
And there's also a one of the choosable abilities to increase that even further for hitting your own allies.
And I agree with that. But to me, it seems almost like a penalty. Like, oh, you have to use heal your allies, because if you don't, like, literally that soldier who's wearing heavy armor, because they're choosing to not die, it makes you harder to heal them. I think the math on that is weird. I actually don't even like having to hit your allies. I mean, I understand where it's fun in a game like Overwatch because it requires that sort of skill, but it just seems frustrating to in Starfinder.
Well, the trade-off is you don't have to do it the shooting way. If you're really worried about missing any of your allies at all, you can just walk up and pop them, give a good old stab.
I don't know how I feel about it, because I was gonna say that it makes it unnecessarily hard to deliver these things, but then at the same time, healing has touch range, and I'm on the fence about it. I'm not gonna say any more about it. Let's continue.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so what you can do with those is you can deliver your injections, and by default, you can choose whether you're going to do a counter agent or a restorative. Counter agents are bad, and restoratives are good. You don't want to hit your allies with the counter agents, usually. Mm-hmm. And this is by default what they do. The counter agents can do -2 to a target's AC, making them easier to hit. Reduce the target's DR by 5, and then that keeps increasing as you level up. 10 at 9th level, at 17th level, it's 15. Reduces the target's resistance to a one type of energy by 5, and again, it has the same progression all the way up to 15th at 17th level. Mm-hmm. And for the restorative, you can grant your target a +1 enhancement bonus to AC, the target can gain a +2 enhancement bonus to all skill checks, or the target can get +10 feet of enhanced bonus to their speed, making them much faster. And depending on what your field of study is, like many classes, the biohacker gets to basically choose a path at first level and go down it. The biohacker will actually choose several paths and go down them throughout their career. That will add more options to what you can do with this injection ability.
Yeah, it will alter what your counter agents and your restoratives are. And then you go to scientific method, which is really a weird ability. Yeah, it's an ability
fan of scientific
method. I like it too. I understand why they balance. So scientific method is for your key ability score, you can choose either wisdom or intelligence. And it affects another class feature called Spark of Ingenuity. If you go instinctive, which is making your key ability score wisdom, you use your wisdom modifier for life sciences, medicine, and physical sciences check.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're studious, where your intelligence modifier is your key stat, you add your intelligence modifier to perception, sense motive for skill checks, and also will saves. Which is the part that I'm just like, whoa, about.
Yeah, yeah. So I get what they're doing. It's also kind of weird. I didn't think that Paizo liked doing ability score swaps anymore, because the bonus wasn't like, it isn't something you can quantify the value of, in the sense that if you are swapping, like, for example, if you are a biohacker and you do not put any points into wisdom and you go studious, then that ability, that bonus is always going to be equal to your key ability score. So like, it's going to constantly go up as you level up. And like, how do you balance an ability around a bonus that keeps going up?
Well, this is how you balance it, Alex. If you look at what they swap, it's basically saying that regardless of whether or not you're int or wiz, you're going to be really good at life science, medicine, perception, sense motives, and will saves. It's the illusion of choice, because if you went the other one, you're already good at the things that the other one gives you.
Yeah, why would you not go studious? Instinctive seems like the clear-cut choice.
But you said two different ones there. You said, why would you not go studious?
Why would you not go studious? Instinctive seems like the inferior of the two choices.
Like I said, it's actually a false dichotomy. They're both equally good, because you get all of the good things that the other one gives you anyway, because your ability score is going to be good enough in the other.
You get less skill points per level.
That is the truth.
If you go instinctive.
That is true.
Yeah. So it's on a razor's edge, but one actually gets more benefits than the other.
I agree.
And where you would...
The only thing that instinctive gets that studious doesn't get is that instinctive would have a higher bonus to like survival skills, but survival isn't a key score, isn't a class skill for this class, and it's not really a great skill in Starfinder in general.
Right.
Yeah, until you don't have somebody that has it on Castroville, but in general, yeah. It's just kind of...
you don't like your weird elf dinosaurs?
Oh no, I'm fine with them. My players don't.
I mean, that dinosaur was really upset when he bled out. I mean, I hope that we set a good example for the rest of them.
No, he was high.
Where it makes a bigger difference is the spark. And I'm skipping one because of context here, but Spark mm-hmm. of Ingenuity basically is a class ability that does change based on your choice here. If you were an instinctive biohacker, which means you went with wisdom, you can now add the dazzled condition to the effects you can impose with counter agents in addition to their normal effects. And it gives lots of rules for that. And at ninth level, you can instead add the flat-footed condition to any of your counter agents, or you can remove any one of the following conditions with your restoratives: dazzled, deafened, fascinated, fatigued, off-target, shaken, or sickened. So like it adds like a whole bunch of medical-based choices plus a straight debuff buff to your injection weapon. If you went studious instead, you don't get any extra options besides the basics, except that you can now shoot a gun that does two of them at once.
Yeah, so like it's actually at Spark of Ingenuity that I agree with game. Studious just looks so much better. Like, I'm sorry, Dazzled is -1 to attack rolls and perception checks. Yeah, I get that you add it to every single counter agent that you make, but like combining two into one, like, that's kind of looks better in every possible scenario. Like, I would totally want you to give me a 10-foot enhancement bonus to my speed while also giving me an armor class bonus. But I actually want to go back to the agents for a second, because I think that they represent a really good place where Starfinder's restrictions on math, which I generally like, might hurt this class more than it helps it.
That's we'll see when you get going.
So the thing with the restoratives is that every restorative gives an enhancement bonus, right? And the way that the math is designed in Starfinder is that bonuses are intentionally kept very limited mm-hmm. in order to make sure that the math doesn't get out of control. I actually wrote an entire blog article about this on Guidance a couple weeks ago.
Right.
And so one of the issues that restorative is going to have is that when you start comparing class composition, which sounds like a really weird thing to talk about when you're talking about a Starfinder party, but it's really easy for the biohacker to either be invalidated by certain players' characters' choices or to and accidentally invalidate other people's choices. So, like, a good example is that a soldier already has probably the highest armor class in the game based on all of the math I've done, even higher than the armored Solarian. Mm-hmm. And if you put a biohacker in that soldier's party, the enhancement bonus stacks with everything the soldier has to boost their AC. So the soldier's AC gets even higher. But the armored Solarian's ability from their armored Solarian ability is an enhancement bonus. So the restorative does not stack with. Along the same lines, the mechanic's ninth level ability, which is like to take a piece, it's a miracle worker, to take a piece of an equipment and make it super strong. And it's like something they can only do like once or twice a day. And one of those choices is to give a +1 enhancement bonus to armor class. And here the biohacker can do that to their allies like a number of times per day equal to their level plus their key ability score. So a minimum of like 5 at first level. And it's just like, to me, when I look at the restorative, I'm just like, this is a place where this class could definitely be stepping on the toes of what other classes do.
I think your argument kind of hits, but it's the same as the mechanics argument. Like, because Starfinder has reined in the bonuses, the stepping on the toes isn't unique to this class. All sorts of classes are going to be stepping on each other's toes with a 3.
Right. But the issue is that this is the core class feature, core part of this ability. If it was like one of the disciplines that you picked and it's like, okay, well, I know that I have a soldier in the party, so I'm going to take the enhancement bonus one. Mm-hmm. Or I know that I have an armored Solarian in the party. Maybe this isn't what I want. But instead, like, this ability that steps on the toes of other classes is like the core first level ability, mm-hmm. arguably the most important ability of the class. And yes, you can totally grab different ones, and yes, you never have to use the one that's redundant on the player, but I think that it's a place where the game starts unfavorably brustling up against each other, and that isn't something that I think is wrong with this class. as much as it is as a place that concerns me a little bit about the class design for Star.
I'm going to tell you, I'm going to accept that as the possibility where I'm going to shoot, have to remember to not shoot the Solarian with the AC bonus and instead give them 10 feet of movement or whatever other bonus I'm going to get from a thing. Yeah, I think that's a better trade-off than the unruly math that Pathfinder First Edition ran through where I'm having to keep track of 18 different bonuses.
Right, and I hope you don't think that I'm saying, like, oh, these should be different bonuses so that they stack. I think more in just how this ability is presented could stand to change a little bit. If it's going to be something that, like, mm-hmm. they can do, at least be a thing that is a little more comparable to like what the mechanic can do, so it's not stepping on the mechanic's toes. But again, that's just my opinion. Mm-hmm.
Moving on, they get weapon specialization just like everybody, and then they get secondary fields of study, and that continue. Their scanner gets bigger. Basically, from this point forward, the fields of study are what makes this class. The capstone, also,
that and the theorems.
Also improved scanner at ninth level is really cool. I really like that one because you get to basically craft serums with the physical science skill, which is cool.
You get to do that at first level. That's part of the scanner's ability. Okay, so the other two class features that really matter are the fields of study and the theorems. And the theorems are kind of a lot like the talent-ish things that many of the other classes get. And they're super cool, so we're going to go over them. But the fields of study is where your character takes the branch. And the biohacker is unique in that it's going to go its branches are short, and you're going to go down multiple of them. So when you get a set of abilities that mostly affect what your counter agent and restorative do when you choose your field of study, and then a few levels later, you're going to get your breakthrough, your scientific breakthrough for studying that. That's going to give you a cool ability, and then that's it. That's all they do. Move on, pick another one, and study something else.
Yeah, they're also super serum at level 20, but once again, you're probably never going to see that most of your games.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that. Capstones are really humongous, and I always ignore them, and I shouldn't.
No, you know what? Most published adventures ignore them, so kind of par for the course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, even Starfinder that fixed the math ignores them. Nothing's...
Well, we're going to give them some time to get there.
Yeah. So what your super serum can do is it can bring a dead creature back to life no matter how long they've been dead, as long as you've got most of that critter. You can rewrite the physical makeup of the target, causing massive internal damage, doing 17d10 points of damage. Also making it exhausted for a round because it's not dead enough yet. Then finally you can make a panacea that cures just about darn near everything. Oh, and you can enhance the target's senses. For 1 hour, the target is under the effect of true seeing because of medicine. Rah, rah.
I mean, it's great. Mm-hmm. I actually want to check this. Give me a second. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Disintegrate does 14 d20, d20, 10.5. So Disintegrate does an average of 7 damage. And this ability is 17 times 5.5 because it's e10. So that would be... So yeah, it's not quite as much as a Disintegrate, but it's pretty close. It does about almost 100 damage on average, which is pretty fun.
Yeah. And in general, when you get to the fields of study, there's a couple... They actually have like medical name themes. So like endocrinology, you work on messing with creatures' hormones and biological systems. Enzymology, working with how enzymes work. Genetics, you change inherited characteristics. Immunology, you know, immune system. Neurochemistry. I said neuropathy for some reason. Going over the chemicals within the brain of living creatures. Pharmacology, the study of drugs and their effect on living creatures. Toxicology, and the study of adverse chemicals on living creatures.
I like that those two things are different things, because one's good drugs and the other one's bad drugs. Even though the pharmacology can also be bad drugs.
I like that pharmacology special ability is basically just like painkillers, like really, really strong painkillers.
Yeah. It's, a lot of these actually give bonuses to saves that you would get if you took the instinctive choice at the beginning. There are things to bonuses against stuff like sickened, nauseated, all those conditions. So it's like you're getting it back anyway if you go to the studied version. Mm-hmm. So once again, another reason not to use it.
Did you guys talk about breakthrough? Like, is that something we remember to talk about? Okay. I just wanted to make sure because I was reading them through. Did we talk about this? Let's talk about theorems instead, though. Theorems are cool.
Yeah. So this is where your Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde happen. Like, you see that right off the bat with the very first theorem that you can choose at second level, which lets you give people gills or yourself gills because gills are great.
Yeah. I mean, it's the equivalent of a, what is it? 350 credit augment, but you know, it's still cool. For a couple minutes, you get it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's just really selling the fact that, hey, you want to start messing with your DNA? Well, this is where you can do it. You also get some other things that are less exciting than mutating your body, like making sure that you can quickly reload your injection weapons or make serums that you can make serums faster using the custom scanner. You can alter your anatomy so that critical hits don't work, because I put my heart in my thigh because that was smart.
The old alchemist standby.
Quick reload is really great. It basically gives the quick reload weapon special property to every injection weapon.
Yeah, but by the way, I don't know if you guys had a lot of time to peek through the fields of study, because there's one that's clearly, I think, clearly better than the others as well.
Okay.
Genetics is so good.
Yeah, genetics is kind of broken.
Yeah, you impose vulnerability to one type of energy of your choice. If the creature has an immunity to that, it just moves it to resistance 10. And if it has resistance, it reduces it by 10. Restorative, it basically gives back eyesight, or alters eyesight, so you get blind sense. Mm-hmm. And if you already have that, you get blind fight.
The thing that's rough about that counter agent is that it counts as a poison. And so a lot of creatures that you would want to use it on, devils are outright immune.
Yeah. That's okay, though, because gene therapy is crazy.
Gene therapy is really good.
Yeah, just ignore the effects of ability damage and drain. I mean, you'll probably still die, but
well, here it's like Reynard running around with 12 negative levels at level 15 and being A-okay.
Yeah, it's just ignore these huge penalties. This thing doesn't do any hit point damage, but it saps con and dex. Oh, you don't care about that? All right, I'll just go back to my hole. It's so much more powerful than the others, I think.
Yeah, and especially considering that, like, every breakthrough, if you choose that field of study as your first one, you get that at level 5. So, like, wow, level 5, ability damage doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, I mean, for a minute, you will still feel it afterwards, but, you know, you'll be able to fight against it.
I'm feeling it, Mr. Krabs.
any other talks about the, or any other comments about the theorems?
I think that field dressing needs a buff. I really like the idea of what it is, the idea of having an ability that someone so good that it like spills over into their stamina is great, but man oh man, the amount you heal is like not worth it. It's not worth it. Why would you tiss?
Yeah, and with all the dice, rather than being like the envoy's stamina regenerating ability, you have so much variability in with it too that you just might have wasted a use of it.
Yeah, I wish that it just uses the mystic cure progression, honestly. Yeah. Like you only could do it 5 times per day. It's not that big.
Yeah. They have the greater version at 14th, but it's still the same kind of issue.
Yeah.
And also, in order to do any sort of in combat healing, now the biohacker can do out of combat healing using his super infinite med kit. But the in combat healing, they have to use the field dressing, because it's the only way to do it, and it is so limited. You only get it a few times a day, and so many of these others are so tempting that I'm not going to assume a biohacker can fix my broken arm in the middle of a fight ever.
And the other thing is that, like, healing already has such a stigma to it, and it's like this squarely puts the, like, if the healer mystic is the number one healer in the, and every other mystic is like second class, like, this puts the biohacker squarely below them. Mm-hmm. And honestly, the envoy is above them, because envoy's inspirational boost heals way more stamina than
them. Yeah, yeah. And one thing that I feel like and correct me on this if I'm wrong, the other two classes that we're going to get to in just a second have a lot more abilities that have you spend resolve points to make things happen. Well, this one is pretty much what you get is what you get,
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't notice anything that spent resolve in this whole class.
What? I'm trying to look through just to make sure I'm not crazy, but it's just what you get is what you get is what you get.
Yeah. Huh.
All right.
I didn't notice that on my read through, but looking back at it, it's like, where does the resolve get used?
Like, the Witch Warper uses a lot, the Vanguard uses a lot.
Well, to be fair, like, the Soldier uses almost no.
But I feel like there's more options for the Soldier. I'd have to look over it, but there's a couple where, but they're not based class features. Usually they're based off of improvements.
I'm just saying that, like, I just got my very first resolve spending ability on Shoku. Last level at level 9.
Yeah, they're things you have to opt into. They're not parts of the class. But the other two classes on our list, the Vanguard and the Witch Warper, have base class features that use that and options.
Yes.
So the
Vanguard.
The Vanguard is a 8 plus Constitution modifier stamina points, 8 hit points. Yeah. Its key ability score is Constitution. No sneaky choices here. It's always Constitution.
It's worth noting that because it has a base of 8 con for stamina points at 8 hit points per level, this does mean that even before you look at con as a key ability score, the Vanguard has the most hit points out of any game. And the fact that you're going to put your starting level plus 4 in con means that you are definitely going to have the most hit points in the game.
I mean, I sat down at that table with a 4th level character with like 54 stamina and 40 something hit points or something like that.
It sounds right.
Mm-hmm. And then it's going to be super useful because the Vanguard is a tank. You are going to want to take hits as this
class. You're going to need to take hits, actually.
Yeah.
James, why don't you tell us about...
Yeah, you play the Vanguard. Go for it.
All right, just going down the spine real quick. Vanguard, 8 stamina points plus constitution modifier, 8 hit points. Constitution's your key score. You're probably going to want dexterity because you can use that for your punching attacks. You get a fair amount of skills, like 6 plus int mod, which is more than I expected. And also there's a list here of 12 class skills. So you're not a dumb boy with all that hit points, unlike the kineticist. You're also proficient in light armor, heavy armor. And you also get to use shields, which they added in this playtest as well. And you're good with basic weapons, advanced melee weapons, and small arms. The pool that they're referring to is something called the Entropic Pool, which is the ability to redirect and control matter changes, accelerating and everything. There's a couple ways that you get resolve point or entropy points. The first way is you can spend a resolve point as a move action to get an entropy point. You can also get them when you take an attack whose damage is equal to or greater than twice your level from a significant enemy. So if you have an enemy that hits you for 8 damage and you're 4th level, boom, you get a resolve, you get a entropy point. Sorry, I keep wanting to say resolve point. Also, if you take a critical hit, you get an entropy point. These entropy points are used kind of like the attunement for Solarian, where they're only gained in combat and they're lost afterwards, but they're used to do things inside of combat. You also get a static bonus, where as long as you have an entropy point, you have a plus 1 enhancement bonus to your armor. And you can only hold an amount of entropy points equal to your con mod.
Yep. And at the end of combat, any entropy points that you've gained are gone, and you can't use them outside of combat.
Yeah. Before we go too further down the ability, can you read off the flavor of this class and why the melee tank of this game is talking about entropic abilities?
Sure. It says that you're a Naya unstoppable force of nature, a juggernaut brimming with fundamental energies that allow you to hold the front line in any conflict. The entropy within the universe, the level of chaos within any system, is at your disposal, and you channel it into a potent combat abilities and into steely resolve. In your hands, the cosmic forces that the cosmic forces that control how suns form and the galaxies die allow you to bolster yourself and your allies against damaging effects, manipulating basic aspects of nature to turn the tide of battle, and infuse your very fist with destructive power of the cosmos.
Is this next line that kind of got to me? To you, the inevitable decay of the galaxy is anything but terrifying.
See, I found that part a little overblown, but it's still... There's a character in the Index series of anime that kind of works off of a similar principle.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not familiar with the Index, just really basically, it's basically magic versus technology, and they exist in the same world and do supernatural stuff. But there's a character there that has the ability to change the mass, velocity, and direction of anything that has mass inside of an area. He just has to calculate how it happens. So this class does it kind of does something like that just natively. So it's pretty fun.
So I know that everybody looks at this class and they're like, oh man, I'm gonna play Juggernaut. Like when you get to the first level ability on Entropic Strikes, this class just really starts screaming to me as like that it's the monk class. Because what Entropic Strikes does is that you can basically do touch attacks that cause people to rapidly decay as you force the inevitable demise of reality. It's great. I mean, that's pretty accurate, right?
But Alex, it can't be the monk class. It can take more than one hit.
I mean, this class is great. Sorry that the old monk doesn't know that. But so like your unarmed, your Entropic Strikes are basically magical advanced melee weapons. They always target EAC, even if you do bludgeoning damage to them, which is great. You touch them and And I like this ability because they took the time to be like, hey, if you need to know what the item strike is equal to your level, which is great because unarmed strikes actually don't have that. So you can never put fusions on your fist and punch people with them. It's very sad. I looked into this, James. I truly did. Also you don't need a free hand to use your strike. So you can literally hold shields in each hand and headbutt people, and your headbutts cause people to die with the force of collapsing.
Wait a minute, Alex. You said a word I don't understand. What is this shield thing?
Oh, well, you see, James said it before. You didn't call him out. If you know, so basically in Starfinder, shields are handled like walking cover. You have shield bonuses to armor class like you would in Pathfinder, but your shield bonus is a it doesn't stack with cover. So like you can't have a shield and then also duck behind a tower and have those bonuses stacked. It's great because it means that if you are someone like me who just does not want to bother with hiding behind poles, then you could just carry a shield around with
you. So you carry the pole with you.
Exactly. So one of the things that struck me weird about the way that this class is laid out is that it lists shields under armor proficiency when the shield rules themselves say that you're automatically proficient with shields if you like have light armor proficiency plus either advanced armor proficiency or heavy armor proficiency. So like I feel like it's kind of redundant to put it there, but I guess we'll see what they end up doing for the final book. Yeah. Maybe it's just a way to warn you that shields exist before you get there.
Yeah, I think it's for a playtest. It's good.
Yeah. But so if punching people and forcing the weight of collapsing stars upon them wasn't good enough for you, you also can imbue any weapon that you wield with this power. So like if you just don't want to touch them, hit their then like do it that way. You can actually make your any weapon that you wield a target AAC and become block and operative weapons. Mm-hmm. I feel like they're gonna have to make sure that you can't just multi-class into, like, you can't be an operative dipping one level into this class, picking up all advanced weapons for free, and then you're just like, congratulations, I'm gonna run around with my ultra-thin sword and trick attack with it. Because currently, that looks like how it's written, because they're all operative weapons.
I mean, I bought a reach weapon because I thought that was fun.
I kind of want them to keep it because letting an operative multi-class and use advanced melee weapons sounds amazing. And man, that operative is going to get smushed. but that's fine. It gives you that ability to strike EAC and get those additional benefits with any weapon, melee weapon, which is cool. It means you can have this extra attack if you need it, or you can just be super agile with pretty much anything. If you wanted to weapon finesse a space katana, you could weapon finesse a space katana.
Yeah, and I think a good point about this, and this is something that I had to have pointed out to me, your entropic strike damage is kind of scaled like unarmed strike in a way. I don't know if it's the exact same progression, but if not, it's super close. But it's 1d3 at first level plus your con mod, and also at third level you get a special weapon specialization for your entropic strike that counts your level as the damage. So you end up doing a significant amount of damage.
Do you know why you wouldn't want to multi-class with this an operative? Because when you do an entropic strike, even if you do it with another weapon, it does your entropic strike damage instead of your regular damage. So if you dipped one level as an operative, you would be doing d3 with your strike forever.
Yeah.
So there you go. That's why I don't multi-class. Don't dip one level operatives. At least go in for.
And you also get what are called disciplines, which are kind of. I meant aspects. Aspects.
Yeah.
Which give you aspects of a type of entropy. They talk about specific elements. Your first one is generally a +2 bonus or the combat maneuver feat for stuff like grapple, reposition, dirty trick. They want you to be doing combat maneuvers.
Yes.
They also, each one gives you a way to gain an entropy point once per combat. Like a extra way to, you know, help boost up how many you need because you're going to run through them. As you get higher levels, you get more unlocks with those certain schools of entropy. And they get better and better as you go up.
They are good. I like that at fourth level, each aspect has its own unique way of generating entropy points for you. I think that's a good flavor and it's fun. Also, I really like that at second level, you get a class feature called Mitigate. It feels super gamey to me, but I also like it.
No, I used it. It's very good. you do end up with an ability later on that allows you to take more reactions in a turn, because you're going to be using your reactions all the time as a Vanguard. You're going to be playing the entire round.
Mm-hmm.
So keep that in the back of your head as we go through the rest of this class.
Yes.
We do need to pick up the pace. We are running super long. So keep going. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So reactive basically gives you extra reactions during your turn. You can only take an extra reaction per turn once at third level, but then at 9th and 15th, you could do it again. So you get up to 3 extra reactions per day whenever you want. You could ever use them to trigger 2 reactions per triggering event, which it's cool. It's like a weaker version of combat ruse. Then did you get to play with Entropic Attunement, James?
Nope. We were 4th level, but at 5th level, Entropic Attunement just allows you to add weapon properties to your strikes.
Yes. So you were already adding operative and block, and then you can spend entropy points to add additional ones. There's a nice big list: breach, bright, forest, penetrating. Yep. You get more as you level up. It's good stuff. It makes you very flexible, and you can do lots of cool spending as you get higher. There's one at 10th level where you're just like, hey, this weapon has reach now. Enjoy.
I'm going to speed us up a little bit. At 7th level, you're immune to flatfooted. At 8th level, you get another Vanguard aspect, and you start becoming better at full attacking like operatives do at 11th level. And then you get
the Stellarian ability. Like at 7th level, you get uncanny agility like an operative, and at 11th, you get flashing strikes like a Stellarian.
Mm-hmm. And then you also get the ability to add a move action as part of a full action at 15th. So you start becoming being able to jump around the battlefield. And at 20th level, your capsule is just invulnerability.
Yeah. The 15th level ability is basically you are always hasted like the spell. Mm-hmm. And the 20th level ability lets you use your reaction to just become immune to all weapon special properties that condition you. It's like, okay, I'm just immune to life. Enjoy.
Yeah, it's a hell of a power.
There are a bunch of aspects that we were talking about, which are kind of like soldier fighting styles for the Vanguard. And basically all of them are themed around a specific combat maneuver. You get that combat maneuver feat at first level, and as well as a small insight bonus to skill checks. And then fourth level is always an ability to give you that changes how you regain resolve or how you gain more entropy points. And then the catalyst and finale are just really cool, powerful abilities.
Yeah, they're kind of like revelations for oracles in a way. At least that's how they feel. And there's 8 different aspects you can take. I took reaction because reaction's really cool.
Yeah, I think that adiabatic, is that how you say it? I think adiabatic might be overpowered, because one of the abilities you get at 5th level lets you target EAC with your combat maneuvers, EAC plus 8 with your combat maneuvers instead of KAC. And so, like, it's going to sound silly, but if you go Skittermander Vanguard, you could have improved grapple at 1st level, you get plus 2 for being a Skittermander, you put your strength as high as you can, and then you target EAC, and you just pin everything.
Hey, Alex, guess what? You don't have to worry about that, because it's part of Entropic Strike at 5th level. When you use a combat maneuver against any adjacent creature, you target 8 plus their EAC.
Yeah, it makes it easier.
Yeah, it comes in the clutch.
Yeah.
Then there's some disciplines, which are basically choices to make. Mm-hmm. In general, a lot of them are based around either reducing damage, taking damage for allies, or changing how things can move around in the area of them. Mm-hmm. There's ones that just reduce the AoE damage from things that you're a part of.
I want to call out that evasion is an option, and evasion specifically requires you to be wearing light or no armor, which sort of adds to my idea, like, you can play this as the tanky class, or you can play this as, like, a lightly armored monk.
Mm-hmm. It definitely fits both ways.
Yeah, and I think that's really cool for a class, because I think one thing you can say about some of the Starfinder classes is that they fit a little too nicely into boxes, and this class feels more like a Pathfinder class in that it has just a bunch of tools and you build what you want.
Yeah. Any last thoughts on the Vanguard pair?
Can we skip the shield rules?
Yeah, that's what, yeah.
Okay. And I really like Inevitable, because I like the idea of just pushing through innies and stunning.
Yeah. You big bully.
Hey, I'm a big fan of the Juggernaut.
Do you know what's funny, guys? This book has the class with the most hit points and the fewest hit points in the same book.
Well, it's a tie with the Technomancer.
I thought Technomancer had 6. It has 5 as well.
I double-checked 5 because I was like, what?
There's also something that this book has.
What's that?
Up until this book, only the mechanic had a bad will save, and now 2 more classes have bad will saves, one of which is the Witch Warper, and that breaks my brain a little bit.
That means 3 classes have it now. Biohacker has a bad will save, too.
That's what I said. This has two classes with bad will saves.
In the book, yeah. Mm-hmm. Go ahead and run down the spine for us, Param.
All right. I want Alex to take lead on this class, but the spine is 5 hit points, 5 plus constitution modifier, stamina points. Key ability score is charisma, because that was the only caster stat that hadn't been represented yet. Class skills are 4 plus int modifier, so the spellcasty class is the dumb one of the book. Light armor proficiency and weapon proficiency is basic melee weapons, grenades, and small arms. I really like that grenades was tossed in there.
Listen. When you're a witchwarper, you don't need skills. You just change reality so things were always the best for you. Why would you need to know how to do things? You could just make everything. Except the class can't really do that.
Okay, so explain what this class does, Alex. But keep in mind, we have 10 minutes.
Yep, I got it. Okay, so the core of this class is based around an ability called Infinite Worlds. Initially, you can do that 2 times per day, and then you get an additional time per day at 4th level and every 3 levels after. Infinite Worlds basically lets you put a 10-foot sphere at an area, and you can change that area so that it appears as it would in an alternate dimension, which basically translates into that entire bubble being difficult. And it actually is one of the few types of difficult terrain that applies against flying creatures. I know this specifically because I posted on the forums asking, and I got a reply from Owen. So you could do it to flying creatures, which is cool. The downside is that it is a very limited ability, only 2 times per day at 1st level. As you level up, you get more things you can do to that area. One of the examples is that if there is a permanent environmental hazard, like a lava flow in that area, you can change that hazard to an alternate timeline where it does different energy damages. So maybe that lava in our dimension does fire damage. Well, you can alter it to a different reality where instead lava is sonic, and there is a sonic stream there instead of lava. And now anything in the lava takes sonic damage instead of fire. It is pretty cool. Eventually it continues to improve. You can raise the area up or down. You can cause the effect to get bigger. You can change how gravity, radiation, cold or heat works in the area. You can change how the atmosphere is. So if you want to suffocate everyone in the area, you can make a thick atmosphere so they're like, ah. It's very cool. Also, but it might be a little limited, but we can talk about that later because I'm trying to move on. The every even level selectable ability in this class is called Paradigm Shifts, which basically represent ways you can change reality to your liking. At 3rd level, you get an ability called Compound Sight, where you basically pick a skill and then you get an insight bonus to it. A really good insight bonus. It's a super flexible, almost channel skill kind of ability, like what the Mystic has, except instead of being required to take specific skills, you just do what you want. Witchwarper does what they want. You get spell penetration and weapon specialization as bonus feats at 3rd level. And at 6th level, you get an ability called Alternate Outcome, where you can swap any roll that you make, like attack rolls, skill checks, saving throws, with basically a reroll. So you can make things happen more favorably. At 19th level, which jumping from 6th to 19th, after the, in between all those levels, you're just basically getting more of the different things we've already talked about. At 19th level, you get the ability to basically pick a number of paradigm shifts that you don't know, and you could just spontaneously swap them in, kind of like the adaptive fighting feat, which means it's like, hey, I can now all of a sudden alter reality this way. Enjoy. Your capstone is the ability to cause reality to stutter around you. Among other things, you can use your paradigm shifts much faster by spending resolve points. And you also get the ability to cast a spell called Warp Reality as a spell-like ability, which is basically the Witch Warper's version of Wish.
Yeah, it counts as 9th level spell casting, right?
Yep, just like Wish and Miracle do. You also have paradigm shifts, which form the core of the class. These are like magic hacks, and they progress at a similar rate. You get one at 2nd, then another at 5th, and every 3 levels afterwards. Like Param and James mentioned, the Witchwarper is a very resolve-heavy class. Many of the paradigm shifts require you to spend resolve, or they can only target creatures a limited number of times per day, or you can only use them the times per day. The Witchwarper is the resource-driven person's max dream. They absolutely and utterly need to have like a tracking spreadsheet, because you have so many abilities that you need to remember when you have and when you're using and why.
Of all the classes, the spellcasting classes, the Witchwarper really is the most like what you consider a classic wizard.
Yes. And it's a shame that a lot of its abilities are not great.
Except that it has some of the most powerful abilities in the game, and the one at my table didn't pick any of them.
No. Yes. Okay.
Yeah, the Witch Warper is a class that is absolutely filled with 3.5 edition toughness feats, meaning that there are some abilities that are great and extremely powerful, and there are other abilities that just really aren't worth your time. And it can be really tough to figure out which one's which.
Yeah, like Thwart Ability, which I just want to highlight, allows people, you spend an RP, to get a new saving throw with a +2 bonus to avoid damage. And if the spell or ability doesn't allow a saving throw, screw it, you get one anyway.
Yeah, you could just you could just save against anything. Save and just not be affected. Any spell or ability that allows a saving throw or that would deal stamina, hit point, or ability damage.
And that's a second level ability. That's crazy for a second level ability.
Right, and then you take that and you compare it to some of the other ones. Like push grenade. And it's just like, this is not useful. Not at all. A great example of one that wishes it could be good but isn't is Shifting Step, where you can basically pick a creature and they can make a will save, and if they fail, they get moved around somewhere. But the problem is that you can only affect a creature with it once every 24 hours. So if they pass their will save, then your ability just doesn't work on them. Mm-hmm. And the class is filled with these one and duns, and its entire spell list is nothing but one and done save and suck, saving throw or suck spells. Like, I think the only spell on the list that I can remember that requires an attack roll instead of a saving throw is the acid arrow spell.
Well, like, there's Jolting Touch. Yeah. There's Overheat. There's a couple.
Overheat is Burning Hands. You have to make a reflex save. And it does half damage if you fail, you know, if you pass, but like, oh no. Yeah. It's I think that I like these abilities. They're really cool. Mm-hmm. One example of one that's really strong is Inhibit, where you can target someone, and if they fail their saving throw, they can't take more than one move action during the turn and can't use full action. Mm-hmm. So if they're under haste, you turned off haste for a like, it's really strong, but it's also kind of, because it's one of those make a will save, and even if you fail, you can't use that on them. I think, and so the thing is like, I think that this type of play style is very similar to what the Witch has in Pathfinder, but the Witch has so many more hexes at their disposal because they got one at every two levels. Mm. And I think they got one at first level too. So like by level two, you had two of them. Mm-hmm. This ability uses the Technomancer progression. So you have such a limited version of them that being locked out of both by level two is harsh. And since all of them are draining your resolve points, and this class has fewer hit points than any other class in the game, using your abilities just makes you more and more likely to die as you use them. And you don't have a really good way to defend yourself against that with this class. At least that was my experience when there was one at my table last Sunday. It was a very rough time for her. Although I will say that lessen injury is great. You spend when someone makes an attack, you spend a reaction to spend a resolve point, and then that target just has to roll minimum damage for their attack. They don't even get a save. It's just congratulations, you spent that resolve point. Great, minimum damage.
Yeah. It's there are some, you just have to balance your ones that are save and suck and RP versus resolve points versus ones that aren't.
So what I think one thing that would really help this class is that if all of them were just, you can only target a creature once and that's that, but they didn't require resolve points, but all of them had the ability to where you could spend a resolve point to use it on a target, even if you already had used it. Mm-hmm. And maybe then like spending the resolve point made it so that you don't get the will save, or, you know, something good happens because you spent the resolve point and it's a little bit better than it was. I think that would be a little bit more fair to this class, because as it stands, you're either guzzling all of your resolve points or you get locked out of these really quickly.
Yeah,
because saving throws are harder to overcome in Starfinder than Pathfinder, and it's just a very high chance that you'll use your ability, it'll flop, and then you have not.
I think the intent is to try to make you take more stuff that will help your party that you don't need to worry about saves, because there's a lot of good things like flash teleport, mm-hmm. dart aside, but if you're going pure offense, it would be an issue.
I agree with you that the ones that protect your party are better right now. I think that using design to make things that hurt enemies weaker or less viable is a design problem, and it goes back to the toughness example I gave earlier in 3.5, where toughness was basically a feat that was designed so that people who didn't take it felt smart because they didn't fall for the design trap. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that, because I mean, I don't think the designer of this class is trying to make a design trap, but that's kind of what happens when all of the buffing party helping ones are just so much better than all mm-hmm. of the debuffing ones.
And yeah. This also falls into the same, it leans really hard on some of your best offensive option is to just summon a critter and keep that, keep summon monster as one of your highest level spells and downcast it like crazy mm-hmm. so that you can always, because that's effective damage that doesn't require saving throws and lasts multiple rounds, and it's a good option.
And like I said, I think this is a good class, but I definitely think that it needs to be kind of smoothed out. I think this class more than any of the other ones really needs a good smoothing. Yeah.
And it's got some of the best flavor of all the classes, and when it is working, it just feels so right.
I haven't seen it work, so I can't make that comment. I assume you have then.
I'll tell you, Alex, you may have looked at it in the worst possible circumstance.
That's fair. That's mm-hmm. really fair. James,
what about the better possible circumstances?
You said you had the better possible circumstances if you're able to fight an enemy that you can fight and you actually took extra resolve, like a healing mystic would, and you have the ability to use all your items, and you take your spells in a way that are offensive to compensate for the lack of repeatability, spammability in your own choices. But you can get a fair amount of work. You just need a party. You're not going to solo anything, mm-hmm. which for some classes feels like you can.
You mean like Vanguard?
Yeah, Vanguard, it feels like you're able to outlast a lot of things. I kept a lot of fights up by just diminishing AoE damage by 50% and bodyguarding people. There's a lot of things you can do just to stay alive with that class. It's very fun.
So that's all the classes. Does anybody have anything they want to shout out to before we call this today?
I'm putting out a new pop culture catalog product.
Oh, yeah. Ooh. It's got like a really sweet cover.
Yeah, it's all about clothing. I'm really excited. I like clothes. Well, that's you know, you giggle. That's the point of the pop culture mm-hmm. catalog. It's stuff that you wouldn't usually see a product be focused on because it's like flavors. Mm-hmm. So I spent like about a week researching different clothing brands and like their history, how they became popular. Because one of the ideas of the pop culture catalog is that they're all based off of real world companies, so like if you see it and you go, oh, I get that reference, then all of a sudden, because you get the reference, you get the joke, you can add your own things to the line that makes sense for your game. Oh, like if you figure out the one in the vid game one that's like Blizzard, you're like, oh, well, he didn't have time to talk about Lost Vikings, but if I wanted to add a Lost Vikings game, then this is where I would go, because this is the Blizzard joke. The Blizzard epoxy joke isn't the best word, but like it's also different enough that it's like, oh, well, this is different enough that it feels like it belongs in a fantasy role-playing.
Did you do any work on secret brands?
On secret brands?
Yeah. Okay, I need to talk to you about what secret brands are later.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Sounds good.
James, you know what secret brands are, right?
I think I have an idea what secret brands are.
All right. Anything you want to shout out to, James?
Nope. Everything's great. Get your playtest data in. Let people see this. Go to the forums. I know sometimes they suck, but let people know what you think.
Yeah. You do. It's a short playtest window. Get those playtests in. Please give the feedback. Help make these the best possible classes that Starfinder has.
Totally. Yeah, this isn't content, just like Pathfinder 2e playtest. Even if you don't like it, just put your work in.
Yep.
And it's also helpful to remember that, like, even if you can't play, if you have some thoughts that you want to share on the forums, that's still useful, too. And fill out the survey. And there are actually, I filled out the one for the Witchwarper already. Mm-hmm. And there are even places to say where it's like, yeah, I didn't get to play it, but this is what I think. Yeah. And that's still data that the team wants.
Also, when you're giving your feedback, please do not phrase any of your feedback in the form of emotional or physical abuse towards the creators of the game. That's a real jerk move, gang.
Yeah.
I feel like our crew is awesome and they would never.
I believe in you all.
Not our section of them. You guys are the best.
I want to shout out to our wonderful other podcasts on the network. Besides, of course, No Direction Prime and Geek Together, some of our regular shows, Adventurous is back! And you will notice that there's weekly episodes hitting the stream again. Remember, Adventurous is our actual play podcast where we are playing through War for the Crown with GM Crystal Frazier, who was the developer for that adventure path. It is fun, amazing. You need to check that out. I'll all the other people I'm playing with do amazing character work, and Crystal is one of the best GMs I've ever had the honor of playing under, and she is able to handle NPCs and multiple NPCs at once like I've never seen a GM be able to manage. She did a whole ballroom scene, and I was convinced I could talk to any given person at any given time, and she would have just been on it. Also, the another actual play that is a little bit more weird and a little bit more crazy, also quite a bit of fun.
I think we're a lot more weird, but that's just me.
The latest episode of Adventures kind of went some weird places.
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah, creepy spider kids.
are they those spiders from Louise's new book?
No, those would be cuddly spider kids, not creepy stab you in the kidneys when you try to hug them and give them cookies spider kids.
Why would you try to hug a spider kid?
Because it was a kid, and then it turned into a spider kid.
Oh, that makes
sense. Yeah. I want to shout out to Seasons Beatings. We are going to have the finale live play recording, and of course, they're still hitting the audio. Episode 5 will hit tomorrow, and then episode 6 will be soon. I'm not sure how many episodes total there are, but we'll do our final live recording this coming Sunday, Sunday, this coming Sunday at noon Eastern. Do check that out. By the time you're listening to this on the audio, this will hit audio on Friday. So you will have 2 days for that. We are playing through Yuletide Terror, one of Alex's adventures, where we are trying to save Santa. Because we need to, from the evil that is Krampus and the ridiculous, horrible, twisted Christmas that Alex has managed to dream up.
I want to point out that my Christmas may be twisted and horrible, but it is oh so loving and faithful to everything that I made fun of. Like the last boss that you guys fought, like you all knew the reference. It was great. You loved it. You loved every moment that it was tearing your bodies apart. It was great.
It was terrible. It was horrific. You took Christmas and you added body horror to it.
I mean, listen, I keep telling you guys, the best way to make any player truly engrossed but also fearful is to do something to their character's physical, their physical image of their character. You know, you do that sort of distortion and you make the horror all the more real.
Mm-hmm.
And listen, the name of the adventure is Yuletide Terror. You should have known that there was going to be horror.
If you have any feedback about that or any of our other endeavors, why don't you check us out on our Discord channel, which is one of the chillest places to talk about Starfinder or Pathfinder or any other related nerddom as it continues to expand and grow and take up my notifications on my phone. It is a great place. Go to nodirectionpodcast.com, our website with our fantastic blog content, and look at the sidebar. You'll see two links there. One to our Discord channel, where you can join in at the most chill, most relaxing, and least toxic community in Pathfinder and Starfinder. We love to have you there. You get to chat with us pretty much all through the week. There's usually one of our staff members in there ready to talk, and as well as our many, many fans.
And so like the one thing that's really important to like talk about that is like if you go on our Discord and like you ping any of us with like a question or whatever, we like always answer. Yeah. Like we are on the ball with it. This isn't like you're in our space. Like it's more like you're at our
Also, you'll see another link when you see that Discord link, and that is to our Patreon. We very much appreciate all of our Patreon backers. You all keep the lights on and keep content like this going. We appreciate each and every one of you, and if you want to support the network and help us continue to make new and better content, you can become a backer at or become a patron on Patreon via the link at nodirectionpodcast.com or patreon.com/nodirection and get up for some fun little rewards, including the unconditioned cards that are going out at our unconditioned supporters, which are very fun cards that feature members of the staff in various hilarious positions because they're meant to be condition cards. So far, we've got some previews of the first couple available there. Those will be going out to backers. I'm really not sure how soon. I know that production's underway. We've got the next batch of cards going. Some surprises there, and do check them. We appreciate you. And again, if you want to support us, you can do so or communicate with us. You can do so at facebook.com/nodirection, twitter.com/nodirection. You can watch this if you like the videos more than you like listening to it with your ears. You can do so at youtube.com/nodirectionshow. And of course, we are live every week at twitch.tv/nodirection. So, until next time, go beyond with no direction.